You ever wonder why some of the worst fights you have are with people that you love? I mean, what goes on inside of us that makes us do things like that? Today, we'll unpack the reasons why we fight with those we love the most.
Welcome to this weekend edition of Living on the Edge with Chip Ingram. Chip's our Bible teacher on this daily discipleship program. I'm Dave Drury. And in this program, Chip begins a series about how to handle relationships when they're under extreme pressure. He's going to take a look at things like what's behind why we fight with people we love, how to resolve conflict, and how to speak the truth in love. So let's get started and join Chip for part one of his message, Why We Fight with Those We Love, from James chapter 4.
I want you to allow your mind to go to a park. It's a beautiful sunny day in your mind's eye. Big fluffy white clouds, the sky's very blue. It's a beautiful park with a lot of greenery. And as the camera of your mind's eye zooms in, there's a bench. And in the background, there's children running and playing and doing what children do, but it's kind of white noise. And as you zoom in, you see there's a little girl who's about maybe 8 or 9 years old. She has little pigtails. She's really cute. She's got a few freckles across her nose. And you see a man sitting on the bench that's obviously her father, and he looks very uncomfortable. As you watch from a distance, he kind of moves here, moves there, and you can tell even from a distance, it's just chit-chat, and he has his keys, and he keeps flipping his keys from one direction to the other because that's what dads do when they have to say something very hard to a very young child, and they don't know exactly how to say it or exactly what to say. As he prepares this speech that he's rehearsed in his mind over and over and over, and this is the moment of truth. He picked her up from their home that's about a mile away. He thought the park would be kind of the best place to break the news. And as he fidgets and tries to figure out as a grown man how to break the news to this little 8 or 9 year old who is daddy's girl, the silence is broken by this little innocent comment. And she looks up at him, and she says, Daddy? He goes, yeah, hon. He said, are you going to come home soon? Are you going to come back to live with me and Mommy? I really miss you. And he realizes that all the rehearsing of his speech in his mind didn't prepare him for this, and everything in him wants to start crying, but he holds back the tears. He says, well, honey, that's why we came to the park today. I needed to tell you something. See, Daddy's not going to be coming home. And what I want you to know, sweetheart, it's not you. I love you. I want to be with you. I wish so much that I could be with you, but it's me and your mommy. We just can't get along. We've tried. We've really tried, sweetheart. And you've heard us late at night, and we yell at each other, and we scream at each other. And we've tried everything, but we fight, fight, fight. And so we're going to get what big people call a divorce. And I'll still see you, honey. I'm going to make sure that I get to come by and, you know, be here on birthdays. And we even have it worked out where you get to spend a couple months with me in the summertime. But no, honey, I can't come home. And she gives him that look that only an 8-year-old can give that says, I don't understand this. You love Mommy and you love me and I love you and I love Mommy. How could two people that love each other this much not be able to work out whatever you need to work out? And he says to her, I know you can't understand, but maybe someday you will. And I just want you to know. And now those little pigtails are kind of down on her shoulder. And now the tears, she's not even crying. They're just flowing and streaming down her face. And until she is 80 years old, that picture in that park will be etched in her memory forever and ever and ever. And it will impact, regardless of what Mommy or Dad says, how she views herself. And it will impact how she relates to the opposite sex. And it will impact how she views God. And it will change everything about her life to some degree. and she didn't understand it when she was 8. She won't fully understand it when she's 18. And she may never fully understand it till she's 80. Why do we fight with those that we love? Why is it that two people that honestly, sincerely, deeply love one another can get at levels of conflict that they have to give up or choose to give up? And as I tell that story, for some of you, we have all kind of different ages. You were that little boy, or you that little girl. And for you, maybe it wasn't you were 8, you could have been 5, or maybe you were 12 or 13. And you remember being on the receiving end of one of your parents, your mom or your dad, telling you that it's just not going to work. And maybe it happened in the bedroom, or maybe it happened in the mall, or maybe it happened in a park. But it's etched in your mind. And it's shaped a lot of you. And for others, you weren't the little boy or little girl. You remember when you were the mom or you were the dad giving the speech to one of your kids. And it seems like a long time ago, and because your mind is made by God and you have an amazing, amazing ability to repress, sometimes you can push it way down deep. And, you know, maybe that was then and you're in a second marriage now and things are better, but as I told that story, some things got really deeply uncomfortable inside of you that you haven't thought about in a while. And it keeps bringing back the question. And I'm talking about Christians. Why do we fight with those that we love? Spouses fight against spouses. Why is it in some of our homes, our children fight against each other? Why is it when kids get to be teenagers that they tend to fight against their parents? Why is it when you get to be an adult and you have grown parents that sometimes you fight with your grown parents? Why is it that people in the same churches that love the same God that have paid by the blood of Christ can just rip churches apart? When someone thinks someone said something about them, or someone's doing something with the building or one of the buses, or we disagree about what should happen to a staff member. Why is it that their families who live within 3 to 5 miles of one another and you don't even speak? You don't even speak to one another. Why do we fight with those that we love? Because the fact is that we do. And what the Holy Spirit is going to say through Jesus' brother, who wrote the very first book of the New Testament, James, he's going to explain to us not only the cause of fighting among us as God's children, he's going to talk about the consequences of what happens when we fight with one another, and then here's the good news. He's going to give us the cure. He's going to give us very direct, clear instruction about how we can stop the conflict, about how we can stop it and those things don't have to go on and restoration can occur. So with that, open your Bibles if you're not already there to James chapter 4 and let's dig in together. And you'll notice what James begins. He raises the very issue. He says, what is the source of quarrels and conflicts among you? Rhetorical question. And by the way, it's in the tense of the verb that says these things are presently occurring in this church. I mean, this is written to a church. And he says, what is the source of quarrels and conflicts among you? In other words, it's happening right now. And then he's going to answer the question, is not the source your pleasures that wage war in your members? Will you circle the word pleasures and then circle the word war? Literally, he says, isn't it your passions that wage war in your members or literally among you? You lust and you do not have, so you commit murder. You are envious and cannot obtain, so you fight and quarrel. You do not have because you do not ask. And then someone's thinking to themselves, no, wait a second, James, you know what? I pray. And he says, yeah, you're right. There is a second category. There's some of you that ask, but you do it with the wrong motives. And you do not receive because you ask with the wrong motives. Why? So that you can spend it on yourself. The summary of that is the root cause of interpersonal conflicts, according to James, is our consuming passion for self-gratification. Jot those two words in, will you? Self-gratification. He says, is it not your pleasure or your passions? And I had you circle that because we get our word hedonism from it. The Greek word is hedone. Hedonism is one who lives for pleasure, the passion for lust to fulfill one's desires, the cravings of the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. It's an addictive self-love. He says the source of your quarrels is your own selfish gratification. It's the me first mindset. You fight because you want this and someone else wants this. It's your lust, it's your passions. He says you envy, or literally you covet. You want what someone else has, and then you don't get it, so you commit murder. Isn't that strong? Those are strong words for a church, isn't it? And whether that literally was happening in this context, or whether he's speaking of murdering people, as Jesus said, if you say raka to your brother, if you have hatred in your heart toward him, you're committing murder. But whether it's a metaphorical murdering with your tongue that is slander, or murdering in your heart out of hatred, or whether it got to be literal, I've seen it become literal. I mean, how many of us heard of a story in a local church where someone gets bent out of shape in a church conflict, right? And they come in on a Sunday morning. I've heard of this at least four or five times in the last 10 years. They come in on a Sunday morning with a gun and either shoot the preacher or shoot one of the elders or leaders or deacons or whatever they call them in the special churches. And you know, this is a church, and I bet if you do the research, everybody in the room is born again. That's hard to imagine, isn't it? But we don't have to imagine it. This is reality. And he says the cause is that you want. You've got this pulsating desire. I have this pulsating desire, even as a believer, to satisfy or gratify my own way. We covet. And this is a strong word. It's idea of not the wholesome kind of God-given pleasure, but the sinful, self-indulgent pleasure, the hot desire to possess something for your own ego and self-gratification. And you can't obtain it. In other words, you get blocked, and so you wage war. And then you don't have things. And he says, you know why? Because you're trying to get it from other places instead of from God. And some of you, you know, you try to get it from God, but you do it with the wrong motives. And so he says the source of interpersonal conflict is self-gratification. And if you wanted to summarize it, I've put some notes down. Our problem, just write two words, selfishness, selfish pride. Well, let's get on the diagnostic side, and then we'll quickly move to the solution side. James is going to say, okay, that's the cause of quarrels. Now he's going to give us God's diagnosis. Our constant quarrels reveal three different things. He's going to say there's some consequences, but these quarrels are going to reveal something, and they're going to reveal something all the way over here. He's going to say that you have a belief system. And in your belief system, because when you have this frustration within, conflict without, you have a belief system that you have believed a lie. And he's going to tell us what that lie is in just a minute. And at the core of that lie is that we have believed the lie of hedonism, and I'll address it in a second. Once you believe a lie, there's a series of behaviors that have you beginning to move farther and farther and farther away from God and closer to the world and the world system. He'll call it the cosmos. It's this world system. The world system is primetime TV, walking out the grocery stand, People, Cosmo, Forbes. There's a world system that says the way to significance, fulfillment, and satisfaction is how you look, what you make, who you know, how many people report to you, what you own, and it's when you can have the pleasures of the world, then you're a somebody. You're just a house remodeled away from being happy. You're just a better sex life away from being happy. You're just that first child away from being happy. You're just getting married. You're single now, but man, if I was married, then you'll be happy. You're just something out there. And the world paints every evening in prime time and now on 150 cable channels, and magazines, and romance novels, and billboards, and songs, and they're all telling you a web that the world is saying, this is what will deliver real happiness and fulfillment. And God says, when we buy into that, we become spiritual adulteresses. we leave our first love and we embrace and fall in love with the world and we lose our relationship and our heart for God. He says we believe a lie, we betray a trust, and then it gets actually scary. He says we actually can come to the point where even though we are God's people, we become enemies. God will literally, in this passage you'll see in the next few verses, God will literally put on battle array when his children are being wooed away from him and beginning to live like the world. He will put on battle array and go to war against us. It will be out of a heart of love, and he will do what I call the velvet vice. It'll be a vice, and they'll have velvet on the outside of it, and he will bring about a velvet vice of pressure in your life to get you to change your mind about what really satisfies and to return to him. It's called the Hebrews 12 experience. All discipline for the moment seems not to be joyful but sorrowful, yet those who've been trained by it, afterwards it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness. Now you say to yourself, where did I get that? That all flows out of the passage here in James 4, 4 through 6. Follow along as I read. Notice he's just told us the quarrels, the cause, the pride. You ask for the wrong motives. Listen to this judgment, verse 4. You adulteresses. That's what he's calling the church, the people in this church. This is strong. Do you not know that friendship with the world is hostility toward God? Therefore, whoever wishes to be a friend of the world, notice this, makes himself an enemy of God. It's in what's called the middle voice, and it's something that we do on our own. We willfully, intentionally, out of our own choices, we make ourselves an enemy with God, even though we're believers. Or do you not think that the scripture speaks to no purpose? He jealously desires the spirit which he made to dwell in us. See, you are a child of God. His spirit dwells in you. And when you or when I, when we get infatuated, when we start to flirt with the world and the world system, and we start to buy the lie, and after we buy the lie, we begin to betray the trust. And after we betray the trust, we begin to live the antithetical kind of life as a Christian. And then God loves me and loves you so much, he will bring the velvet vice of discipline because he's jealous over the spirit that's in you. When you prayed to receive Christ, remember, behold, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone will open the door, right? I will come into him and sup with him and he with me. Unless a man is born again a second time, you got to be born of the water, physical birth. You got to be born of the spirit. The spirit of God comes in. You're sealed with the spirit. You're marked off as God's possession. You're sealed as a part of his. His spirit dwells in you. He jealously guards that. You are his. And it's just like a husband when he begins to watch his wife flirt. Or begins to watch his wife go on a date with another man. A good husband goes after that wife and says, hey, you know, this is totally unacceptable. But notice his response is he gives more grace. He gives more grace. Well, how does he give the grace? Therefore, it says, and he quotes the Old Testament here, God is opposed, literally, he's anti, he's against the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. Literally, he goes, adulteresses or unfaithful creatures, don't you know, circle the word friendship, will you? That's our word phileo. It's the affection with the world system and its sensual pleasures. It means you're in hostility. You've become an enemy or you're in hostility with God. You make yourself an enemy. Then he goes on to say, he yearns jealously for the spirit that he puts within us. And this word, if you want to circle through it, God opposes the proud. It's a picture as you study this phrase of literally God going into battle and putting on holy array in battle to come against that which is opposed to what's good. And there are times in your life and there's times in my life when we do that.
You're listening to Living on the Edge with Chip Ingram, and Chip will be back in just a minute with his application. Chip's message today is from his series, Relationships Under Pressure, Keeping It Together When the World's Falling Apart. In this series, you'll learn common lies we all tend to believe about ourselves and others, lies that wreck relationships. You'll discover the causes of conflict and get practical help for restoring damaged relationships. If you or someone you know could use a little relationship wisdom, this series is for you. To see more details or to order this set of messages called Relationships Under Pressure, just tap special offers on the app or visit us online at livingontheedge.org.
I'll be right back in just a minute with some final thoughts about today's message. But you know, in light of the things that we talked about today, I just want to acknowledge that some of the most painful conflicts and difficult relationship experiences we have is with our adult children. No matter how much you love God, no matter how good your family is, when our children become adults, things change. Yes, they're to honor us, but they don't obey us anymore. And we go from, you know, when they're small to telling them what to do, to negotiating when they're teens, and then we launch them, and then a lot of things change. Of all the things we've heard at Living on the Edge, in terms of where are the needs, we've heard over and over, will you help us with our adult children? Such conflicts, with such changes in values, such problems that people don't have answers to. That's why I teamed up with parenting expert Jim Burns to create a resource called How to Navigate Life with Your Adult Children. Jim and I discuss principles that will empower and equip you as a parent when you struggle with those delicate relationships when your kids are now adults. We're going to talk about control issues. We'll talk about when to speak and when to keep your mouth shut. This is a resource I think that's really going to help you.
Well, one of the most fulfilling gifts we can enjoy as parents is a great relationship with our adult children, where we respect and enjoy each other so much that we actually look forward to spending time together. So the whole aim of this online video course called How to Navigate Life with Your Adult Children is to give you the practical tools you need to successfully build those kinds of relationships with your kids. It's absolutely free. It's 6 sessions with Chip and Jim Burns, and you can do them at your own pace, whenever you want. So I hope you'll tap special offers on the app or go to livingontheedge.org and take advantage of this great resource. You're going to be glad you did. Well, now here's Chip with some final thoughts from today's message.
As we close today's program, there are lots of circumstances in which we fight with those we love. We've all experienced them. Some are external, some are internal. Some have to do with, you know, global things. Other things have to do with finances, losing a job, things don't go right, you have an argument. But the fact of the matter is adversity doesn't build character, it reveals character. And what I mean by that is this, is that when there's conflict or pressure and something comes out of my mouth and I blame my roommate or I blame one of my kids or I blame my wife or I blow up in anger. I mean, we all have stuff like that happen. But what we tend to do is we think the problem is the circumstance. And if that could change, right? If we could just have more room in the house, if we could just remodel the kitchen, if my wife would just be more affectionate, if my husband would just literally get out there and work harder and then really help me out with the kids, if my roommate wouldn't eat my food in the refrigerator, right? We have all these things and we think the problem is the other person. The fact of the matter is this passage says there's a reason why we fight with those we love. It is because in our nature, apart from the supernatural work of Jesus Christ, we are fearful, selfish, petty people who are fighting with other fearful, selfish, petty people. And the lie is that there's a quick fix to break the cycle. The lie is that there's just some little switch, and it's usually a switch the other person needs to make. And this passage is teaching us that we need to humble ourselves. And this passage will teach us in our next broadcast how we can take steps to address the very thing he points out. Because when we become selfless and caring instead of selfish and petty, then we see unity and relationships be restored. You're not going to want to miss our next broadcast.
At Living on the Edge, we're happy to let you know about an easy way to listen to our extended teaching podcast. Hear Chip anytime on Amazon's Alexa Echo and Echo Dot. Just say, "Alexa, enable the Chip Ingram podcast." Once Alexa's enabled with that skill, all you need to say is, "Alexa, play the Chip Ingram podcast." You'll hear that day's extended teaching anytime you want. Well, until next time, this is Dave Drewy saying thanks for joining us for this weekend edition of Living on the Edge.